Good morning, Lisa. We have a special guest today, Alana Moore, and I leave to you all the interview. I'm just here to introduce Alana and your channel. So we share new tips and tricks, all Alana job, like an author and like geomancer and more. Okay, so welcome.
Thank you, Andrea. Hi, good morning, good afternoon, good evening. This is Lisa from Adventures in Agriculture. It is July the 10th in 2023, and welcome everybody. So today it's a real pleasure to have both Andrea, who we all know, who's working with us in the concept of electroculture and working on the project for the piece of land I have in Italy, in Puglia. And with him is somebody, a colleague and a friend of his, is Alana Moore. And she, I'll use the title of a earth energy specialist and an author on that. And that's an interesting. So we were going around looking at that. So Alana, welcome. Welcome to the channel. How are you today?
Thank you, Lisa. I'm good. However, I do have to protect myself because we're doing a wireless Zoom and I am electrosensitive. So unfortunately, I have to veil myself. Otherwise, I'll have a splitting headache tomorrow.
Yeah, I think more of us are probably electrosensitive than we realize, but this is very interesting. So Alana, you know, we were starting off the conversation by trying to get an understanding of how you actually described yourself. Yeah. So why don't we start with that? You said
geomancy.
With earth energy specialists, but why don't you do a little description about what your core work is right now?
Oh gosh, it's a very big field. That's why I've written 8 books on the subject and still haven't explained it all.
Okay. Well, just sort of highlight what you feel right now, like just to get people into what you're doing.
Yes. Well, I've started off with dowsing. And people will be probably familiar with that. But I apply it to finding what are the environmental energy influences of places and how they can be harnessed and used or avoided if they're detrimental for health. And when I'm doing my house consultancy, it's typically people feeling unwell or uncomfortable in their home, so I have to do a diagnosis, site survey by pendulum dowsing. These days I much prefer to do the map dowsing, so I work remotely, and sometimes I have to find solutions and do energetic corrections remotely as well, which for me is fascinating work. It's always a great challenge every job that I get. But I have focused a lot on teaching as well, because I've found it's enriched my life so much, the understanding of the energetic universe, that I love to share it with people. And my favorite application is finding and connecting with the nature spirit kingdom. And that's something a bit unusual. Also applying it to gardening, farming, which is the focus of much of my writings. Then when I started doing that, that was also a very unusual application.
I love the fact that you mentioned the teaching part, because right now that's one of the things that I'm focused on, that I find that the core concept of the law of one, which is teach, learn, learn, teach. And so much of the time as we teach, we're learning more and we're actually clarifying our beliefs in something or coming up with the questions of the next things that we want to learn and identify. So that's a beautiful thing that you said. So it sounds
exactly,
like...
Yes, because I've been lucky to be invited to teach in interesting parts of the world with other dowsers, and some of them who've been dowsing longer than me, so that there's been an exchange of ideas and discoveries, and it's been super exciting for me.
Yeah, that does sound really exciting.
It's my life's work, because I started 40 years ago.
Wow. So how did you get into things like this, and how did you identify this as an area that you even had an interest in.
Yes, it's not like I had druid parents or anything. I had no religion, so I was a blank slate in terms of spirituality, but spirits manifested to me, and I became very soon aware of the spirit world and was impacted by that. And I had to navigate my way around that myself because there was no one to help me 50 years ago. Right. And I had to read books that the Theosophical Society had published, you know, a century ago. And gradually I realized that there was nothing wrong with me. It's just that I was a bit more psychically open than the average person. And then I went on to develop that ability rather than sort of smother it like the standard education system might do.
Right.
And I encourage other people to develop their sensitivity as well, because I think there's a great need for that.
Yeah, that's really important. So it's interesting. So you're saying, you know, you're looking at the earth energy specialist, yet you mentioned here you're talking about spirits out there. Yes. So we've got the earth and the spirits. How are they connected from the work that you've done?
Well, yes. Earth energy is just sort of a little part of it, well, a big part of it. But where there's energies, there's usually spirits. There's human spirits, there's nature spirits, there's angels. None of this I was brought up to believe in, but all of my understanding is from my own experience. And that's when I found it was authentic. It wasn't something that I was reading in a book, though it was very comforting to get the confirmation in books that other people had had similar experiences.
Right.
Because otherwise you feel a bit alienated that you know, strange things are happening to you. But I think maybe the spirits picked me out to train me up to do what people have been doing for thousands of years, which is connecting into the spiritual dimensions of life and helping people who have problems that can't be worked out on a logical, physical level. And that's where the dowsing is so useful, that when you run out of the logical possibilities, that you can look into the invisible energetic world and see what's happening there.
Right. That's so interesting on that. So one of the things that brought me to this region in Puglia, Italy, were the olive trees. And the and this whole region of Puglia is the heel of the boot of Italy. It is a very, very long coastal region that has a history of olive trees. The southern part of Puglia has had this devastation of the olive trees, whilst the northern part continues to thrive. Now, the fact that there is a significant difference between the north and the south, and at some point we all know that there's a line that there's health and then there's not health, you know, with these things, and you're like so this is what the narrative, and I'm sorry for this long question, I want to give you some background about it.
Yeah.
So the narrative that has been put out there is that there's a bacteria that is affecting the trees and killing the trees.
Wow.
So I came here, city girl from New York City, coming into Puglia, knowing I wanted to get into the agricultural side from my understanding of non-systemic things and frequency work that I've done. On the human side, I saw this is interesting. And I had this deep connection with the trees, Alana, where I looked at them at first and I saw that around the sort of devastated trunks of trees that looked dead, there was new life sprouting up around it. And I kept on staring and looking at these trees, and I saw, heard, felt, I don't even think I have human words or human ways to communicate, to say, to know that they were telling me, we're not dead. Uh-huh. We are not dead. I always like to liken everything to a great line in the movie, The Princess Bride. It's like, they were mostly dead, you know, but they were not dead. They were mostly dead. And they were like, you hear it, you sense it. We're reaching out. We look for your help on that. And still to this day, this is the kind of work that I'm trying to do down here. So I'm very curious, because I know that Andrea is going to bring you down there. to figure out what they're trying to say, how, what they need to have that. Because I have a thesis, a global thesis on trees, which goes into the concept of there are forces trying to terraform this planet for a different species that is not human with much lower oxygen levels, because the trees play a huge part of oxygenation as well as the sea. So I'm very curious, have you run into anything with trees in particular, or how would you approach like what I'm telling, like if a client came to you, how would you approach this concept to look at what's happening with these trees down here?
Yes, well, I'm very sad to hear that about the olive trees. I hadn't heard that, but where I live in Ireland, I'm from Australia, but I live in Ireland, and there's several species that are in terrible decline because of disease. Like the ash tree was the iconic, most sacred tree, the world tree, and they're all dying. And previous to that, of course, there was the Dutch elm disease, annihilating them all across Europe. So that, and then there's other ones, there's a pine tree one, usually coming in from Europe. But as I was telling my students in Germany the other day, they used in back in the 80s, they used to talk about the death of the forest. And it was actually along the borders between the east and the west before the Berlin Wall went down. Mm-hmm. Pine trees were dying from the top down, and pine trees are very antenna shaped. And as soon as the Berlin Wall went down and they shut down all the radar stations that were sending out the massive amount of radar communications, I think that that problem reversed, because I've driven up through Bavaria up that way and I've gone past some of the old derelict radar stations, and they're full of trees. There's trees sort of growing out of the buildings and they're all healthy. So I think there's a lot of problems for trees caused from the electrosmog, as we call it here, or electromagnetic radiation pollution.
Right.
That's weakening the trees in many cases, in many areas. So allowing them to get sick, because I think this is mirroring what's happened in the human population. And I mean, you can't really say there's more chemicals in the world. There's, you know, since World War II, there's been a lot of agricultural chemicals. There's always been a lot of that since then. So what has changed? Well, it may be associated with this exponential growth of electrosmog, weakening the trees.
Yeah, this makes so much sense, because the thesis that I've had on there, Lana, has been if you look around the world on what is affecting the trees, it's all the same symptom. They call it something different. There's a different vector affecting it, or the narrative gives you a different vector. For example, in the Rocky Mountains, they say there is a blight of beetles. And those beetles are attacking the trees on the mountains, and they die from the inside up because the water can't get up. You go into the olive trees here, it's the same thing. They're saying it's a struggle. You can't have the water go up. So they die from the top, not around the bottom. Then I saw, not this last summer, the summer before, no, last summer, there was, this was sort of to me the final piece of the pattern. They were just starting to have that same type of death in the Dolomites in northern Italy, just outside of Austria. And it was the same thing. And they were said, well, it was a beetle. Well, all of these things, we know insects can be vectors of certain things, but there's something going on, and maybe they're interacting with these electromagnetic frequencies. But one of the things that you find down here is a very, very heavy use of glyphosate. And the symptomatology of the trees was corresponding to a research project that was paid for by the region of Puglia and then done by UC Davis, one of the top supposed agricultural schools in the US. The conclusion was, whilst Xylella was present, it wasn't in sufficient amount to kill the tree. And we all know that that's a very gentle way for a research project. But then they also said there was the appearance of this thing called the biome, a biofilm that surrounded the vasculature, not allowing water to come up. And I had worked in some of the areas where there was biofilms, and biofilm is a protective mechanism to an overexposure to an antibiotic.
Wow.
And you know what glyphosate is categorized as? An antibiotic. That was what it first was. So this is, to me, like the whole thesis of this. There's this global approach to this. And to me, this is really interesting. So I'd be very curious, like, as you're thinking about, like, if you, as we get into this project, very excited to explore what you see or what you feel and what the spirits are feeling down here, because these trees are saying not dead, ready to stay, because all of trees are for thousands of years. They're majestical, beautiful creatures.
Long, very long lived, usually.
And they tell the stories and they help us and they, you know, they keep us grounded in a lot of ways. So I'm just, the tree thing is very interesting to me, though.
Yes, yeah. I love trees as well. And I've planted thousands of trees and I've written a book, Plant Spirit Gardener, to encourage people to love trees. And that's the good feedback I get, that the people have more reason to. Oh, I thought I had a copy to show you. But
oh, you did. Okay. Well, we can put these down.
Anyway, take my word for it. And yes, that's interesting. I mean, Professor Callahan came from the States in 30 years ago to Australia and taught us a lot about energies at a workshop I attended of his. But he was an expert, and he actually worked for pesticide companies, which wasn't good. But when he retired, he did more benign applications of his knowledge. And the power towers sort of came out of that. But he said that the insects are attracted to the signals that the plants give out when they're weakened. So they're only just coming to get a free meal because, you know, they're not they're just a symptom of the problem. They're not the true cause of the problem, but they're just responding to the weakening of the trees.
And that is very, very interesting. And it makes so much sense.
Yeah.
That makes so much sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. So it's almost like they are the vultures, the sort of the last one. They just feed upon a prey that's already weakened.
Yes. He talked about how, you know, in the crop situation, that the sick, unhealthy, weak crops are emitting ammonia, and that the insects are attuned to that. Their antennae, he was an expert in the antennae, they can pick up those signals and then make a beeline to those plants and munch on them.
Wow. Go ahead. I'm so sorry. Go ahead.
So there could be a connection with, there could be an aspect. Yes.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. That's very, very interesting, Alana. I wonder if there are correlations to different frequencies that could be put there to push away. Because I think everything has a frequency that we could work with that would be a natural way. Because that's what these electromagnetic smog is. It's a frequency, but they're on the negative side of the frequency.
Yeah. So like just what pops into my mind is the art of radionics, that people create solutions by scrambling or reversing the frequency signatures of substances and broadcasting them in some manner to correct problems. And there's a lot of specialists. I work with Wolfgang Kuhl in Germany, and he was involved with the Radionic Association of Germany. And I mean, I always approach these things as a mild skeptic, because I want to see results, but I have seen results with his radionic cards, so you know, I test them first, and that approach could be useful. It's worth a try anyway.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And it's very benign, but you're right. There's all this the frequencies, like you're feeling the physical effects of the frequencies, and people are always feeling this, but then they become used to the exposure to the frequencies. So do the trees. Yes. Weakened by that. Mm. But there are just certain things that are, you know, we want to look at things without chemicals. And here it's shocking that you would have thought that Italy would be a very natural agricultural environment. And Puglia is like the heartland of agriculture in Italy. It's the California of Italy, if you will. And here people use a lot of chemicals, and it's very natural for them to use the chemicals.
Wow.
And it's kind of shocking.
Yes. So, yeah. I'm curious about the trees that are grown organically. Do we see the problem with those trees, or are they okay?
Well, this is the thing. You don't have a lot. And I'm meeting those who have an exposure to some of organic farming, but the soil is so damaged. And the first thing that I'm working with Andrea to do is to re-energize the soil and put the life back into the soil, which is the first thing. Then the other part is that things have been modified. So in order to fight this quote unquote bacterial blight of Xylella, the narrative, the solution from the government and the bodies is to put in and plant a variety of tree that has a resistance. Well, that variety is modified.
Uh-oh. And
we all know these modification things, how they come up with it. And this is the interesting part of what we're experiencing here, is that I've found some sources of original seed trees, but it's really hard to find. And we're also then going through and trying to identify how you can confirm the genealogy, the provenance of that seed. So I think really purebred seed is going to be very important as we move forward. Yeah, that's going to be very interesting. Yeah, so there's a whole
Might have to go to Australia, where there's like wild olive trees have been there for probably 100 years in South Australia. They're like a pest.
Yeah,
in the wild.
Yeah, but you know, it's fascinating, because it takes you have to go, what you're saying is it's the soil, it's the exposure, it's the seed, and then it's the care as you maintain the tree, all of these things. And my thesis here, the hope is that not only do we reverse what's happening to the trees down here, but that we are able to go back to the original seed, and which is what I'm trying to do on my property and others, anybody else, as we work together and pull these workshops together. And then also to ensure that we're doing natural approaches to it, but make people aware of the differences, and then use electroculture and other ways to speed up the growth of these trees so they get into a productive level more quickly.
Great. Well, that's a very valuable project by the sound of it. Yeah.
And it's very exciting, because all of this comes into what you're doing, frequencies. Energetically, though, you're here in Italy. What are you feeling energetically with the land in Italy right now as you're here?
I haven't been here long enough to make much comment, because I'm in a natural mountain environment here at Andreas. And
there's
integrity
special
to it, because it is kind of unspoiled, because it's steep mountainsides, and so that's lovely. The animal agriculture, not so great, but the landscapes here are lovely. But I was here last summer, and I was a bit shocked actually by the drought last August, and the bleached landscapes of, you know, dry and hot. I thought, oh, I feel like I'm back in Australia, because the extreme climate. But see, in Australia, we're used to an extreme climate. It is, however, more extreme these days. But it goes from one extreme to the next. So often the Australian farmers have come up with solutions to deal with some of those problems of an extreme climate. And might be helpful.
Wow, very interesting. Well, wonderful, Alana. This is so great to get a chance to know you. I appreciate your time on this. Is there anything that you'd like to share right now for people as they look, as we go into this project and we learn more about how what you do with Andrea and his team?
I can't think of anything offhand, but I would like to say that Andrea has been fabulous in helping to do translations of my books to make them available to people here in Italy. Otherwise, they're mostly in English, but some of my books are published by Acres USA. Some are published in Chinese language and German. Hopefully people will have a look at some of those if they want to get some more ideas. There's a few of my babies. And for instance, my most popular book is about natural poultry care.
Mm.
It's nothing to do with esoteric agriculture, but it's all about natural. I'm very into the natural. And also we have some of my documentary films, and now Andrea has made them available online. So if people want to know a bit more about my approach, they can avail of it that way. That's all I can think of at the moment.
Terrific. Well, we'll put those in the thing, Andrea, right? Wonderful. So, Andrea, any last words you want to do? Want to add anything to what Alana has said or for this introduction?
No, I really like Alana's approach, and we have a lot of common things. She teach me new vision, new approaches, even this time with the last workshop we did on Sunday and Saturday. So thank you, Alana, again. You are invited like every year with a new book translation, new experience. Every time is different, and we understand more and more by learning, by doing workshop projects and studying. We always study.
We're all learning.
Yeah, that's a life
learning process. Yeah.
Continuous learning.
Yes.
So thank you, Lisa.
Thank
you for your work with the trees. It's so important. Yay, I really wish you well with that.
Thank you very much. It's going to be really super fun. So thank you. This is Lisa with Adventures in Agriculture with Andrea Denali and Alana Moore saying goodbye and have a great day. Ciao.
Goodbye. Ciao.
Ciao.